directed by Rudy Valli. This is Rudy Valli and Company. It is our pleasure and yours this evening to welcome a couple of footloose troopers back to the USA after extensive wanderings abroad. The first, the celebrated actor, Richard Bennett, father of Constance and Joan, who is home again after a long vacation in Brazil, where he not only recovered his health, but also, I'm told, helped find a gold mine in the Grand Chaco country. Tonight's performance is his first on the radio. Our second wandering boy, celebrated comedian, Lou Holt. Lou returned quite recently from England, where he also discovered a gold mine at every music hall box office. Tonight's performance is his first in the air in nearly a year. His third distinguished guest of the evening, Max Eastman, author of The Enjoyment of Laughter, a specialist in the anatomy of the human giggle, who will attempt to tell us just what's wrong with radio comedy. To these three veterans, we add a dash of youth in the comely person of Miss Joan Edwards, a new singer of song. And last, but not for a minute least, we give you again Edgar Bergen and his remarkable lad about town, Charlie McCarthy. It premiered last night. I'm sure that it is a great picture. Wake up and live. Wake up and live. Don't mind the rainy patter, and you will find it's mind over matter. Dark clouds will break up if you will wake up and live. Wake up and live. Show the stuff you're made of. Just follow through. What are you afraid of? You'll buy it, won't you? Why don't you wake up and live? Come out of yourself. Hey, fella, find your place in the sun. Come out of your shell. Hey, fella, just be a go-getting son of a gun. Oh, wake up and live. Lady Luck is yawning, hop on your toes, a better day is dawning, don't let up, get up and give yourself a shake up, wake up and live. Noah Webster, who ought to know, defines ventriloquism as the act or art of speaking as if from another source than the voice. The artist who perpetrates the act, Edgar Bergen. The other source in this instance, Charlie McCarthy.
Lack-a-day, lack-a-day.
Just a moment, Charlie. Please, that yawning.
Huh?
That yawning.
Yeah, that's what it was. Anything wrong with it?
I believe your mouth was open.
Yeah, well, you ought to know. You opened it.
All right. Young man, I don't know why you should think that you're exempt from any of the rules of good manners.
No?
No.
Well, I tell you, you're talking to a man now who has just returned from a very smart weekend party in Washington, D.C.
Is that so?
Mm-hmm. And they didn't find it necessary to criticize my behavior.
Oh, they didn't?
No.
I'm sorry.
Uh-huh.
And might I ask who invited you to Washington, D.C.?
Well, I have a girl down there.
Oh, I know.
If you must know.
Yes.
Very pretty, too.
Yes.
And she has a twin sister.
Oh, I see.
Mm-hmm. I'm in love with one of them, but I don't know which one it is. I can't tell one from the other. Half of the time, I don't even try.
Well, that is interesting.
Uh-huh.
Did you have a nice time?
Yes, I did.
Yes?
Saturday morning, we went on a clam digging party.
Clam digging?
Yeah.
I see.
That afternoon, I ate 4 or 5 of the clams.
You did?
Mm-hmm. I became very ill.
But very ill, I see.
Why, I shall never know.
Perhaps some of the clams have been open too long.
Open too long?
Yes.
The clams?
Yes.
Oh, so you have to open them.
Oh.
Well, you have to find those things out.
Yes. Well, I do hope it didn't ruin your weekend.
Oh, not at all. I was going strong that evening.
Yes.
You see, we had a very exclusive dinner party.
You did?
Mm-hmm.
I see.
And after dinner, we all danced the rumba.
The rumba?
Yeah. Till the side of the house fell off. From then on, it was open house.
Open. That is interesting.
Yes.
Yes. It must have been a very gay affair.
Oh, it was. It was positively brilliant.
Brilliant.
Mm-hmm. The house was lit up like a Christmas tree. And I wasn't doing so bad myself.
Well, I don't think I have to ask whether you did your part to make it a success.
No, believe me, Edgar, I did. Believe me.
I believe you.
Things started getting a little bit lully, you know, around midnight.
I see.
So I jumped up.
I see.
And I climbed up on the balcony railing, see?
Yes.
And I do a standing, sitting, squatting half-gainer dive. Right in the punch bowl.
The punch bowl?
Yes.
Yes.
I didn't know one bowl of punch could go so far.
I think I understand.
Yes, well, that's what happened.
I imagine so.
Mm-hmm. So when I came up for the third time, I was rescued.
You were dazed.
Yes, I was punch drunk. I was rescued by, what's his name? The Viceroy of Guatemala.
Oh, the Viceroy of Guatemala.
Yes.
Now, Charlie.
So help me.
No, no.
No?
No.
I bet I'm close.
No, you're not. No, no.
That's what he told me.
He did.
Yes. Well, he was the Viceroy in 1925 and 26 and 2750, I see. Of course, that's with 2 pair of pants here. And it's a good buy of anybody's money.
I imagine so.
Yes.
Well, now, Charlie, would you mind telling me just exactly what happened?
Well, personally, I wasn't invited.
Oh, I see.
So I don't know.
Oh, yeah, that explains it all. I didn't think your heart was in Washington.
No, no.
It's still that Gertrude somebody, isn't it?
No. That's a closed book, Mr. Bergen.
I see.
A rather delicate subject, too.
I see. Well, what happened?
You want to know?
Yes.
Well, a few nights ago, we were out walking, see?
Yes.
And I asked her if she'd like to have something to eat. That is loud enough for her to hear me, too. I was reminded of it when we passed one of those little restaurants, you know, on wheels.
Oh, I see.
Wagon affairs.
Yes.
You look around, you wonder where the horse went.
Yes.
You go inside and you order a steak and you find out where it went.
Oh, I see. I see. Well, did you invite her to dinner?
I did, yes.
I see.
And she ordered everything on the menu, including the name of the restaurant.
Well, that must have been embarrassing.
Yes. I wish you could see her eat. By the way she tore into that food, I thought she was mad at it.
Well, it must have embarrassed you.
Oh, it did, Mr. Bergen. I was so embarrassed, I really cried. I cried all through the meal. From the soup to the check, you. When the check came, I screamed.
Well, that is all embarrassing, isn't it?
Yes.
But tell me, was she attractive?
Well, attractive?
Yes.
Yes and no, I mean. The lighting in the restaurant was rather subdued, you know. And that was all in her favor. I do remember one thing. I complimented her on her rosy cheeks, see?
Yes.
I had never seen such rosy cheeks. Oh, for rosy.
Yes.
Of course, later on, I found out it was ketchup.
Oh, I see. Tomato.
Oh, she certainly was.
Yes. Well, maybe she'd never been in a restaurant before.
Oh, yes, she had. She was perfectly at home there. She knew what to do with everything you put in front of her. She either ate it or she stole it. And she sold so much silverware that when we walked out, she jingled like sleigh bells.
Oh, now, now.
Honest, four men hollered Merry Christmas.
Oh.
Pictures on the completion and presentation of their super spectacle, Top of the Town. Don't miss it. This is one of the outstanding tunes sung by Gertrude Leeson in the picture. Where Are You?
Where are you? Where have you gone without me? I thought you cared. Where are said goodbye, love. What had we to gain when I gave you my love? Was it all in vain or all lies true? Must I go on pretending? Where is my happy ending?
Interlude tonight is in the nature of a welcome home celebration for one of America's finest actors, Richard Bennett, just returned from a long vacation in Rio and the interior of Brazil. Mr. Bennett's thousands of friends in and out of the theater will be glad to learn that he is completely recovered in health after the breakdown that forced his temporary retirement during the run of Winterset last season. To his daughters, Constance and Joan in Hollywood, Barbara in New York, he sends paternal greetings. You will hear Mr. Bennett tonight in a World War drama with an unusual background. Title, The Volunteer. The writers, Ed Cantor and Sanford Barnett. Richard Bennett in The Volunteer. His first radio performance.
Place, Northern India in 1915. Inspired by the promises of enemy secret agents, native hill tribes have rebelled against the British. A small punitive expedition sent into the hills has been cut off from its base of supplies. Scene, the headquarters tent, about dusk. The officer in charge, played by Mr. Bennett, enters.
Hello, Carter.
Hello, sir. Good Lord, sir, your arm.
I've been taking a look up ahead. Got chink in the shoulder.
Not serious.
Any word from Black River?
Sorry, sir. There's been no word.
What about casualties here? Has Donald... that is, Lieutenant Wood...
Wood reported 10 minutes ago, sir. There hasn't been much firing. I dare say they're waiting for nightfall, as usual.
No word from Black River. I can't understand it, Cutter. Pardon, it doesn't make your sense. He sent four pigeons up. One of them must have gone through. It had to go through.
Well, say something, Gossett. Don't stand there like a confounded mummy.
I'm sorry, sir. If there's anything I can do...
Don't mind me, Carter. A little upset. His arm is throbbing like a blasted drum. Those black swine got Jenkins through the head.
I'm awfully sorry, sir.
Best sergeant I ever had. He's got to get word through to Black River. We've got to hold out here at any cost until we do get a message through.
That wouldn't be too difficult. But without food, without ammunition...
Not necessary for you to remind me of that, Carter. Or headquarters either. I've been told to get men and supplies from Black River. That was their last message. There are three companies in the depot there waiting to join us.
But between us and Black River, sir...
Headquarters knows that, too. They say we've got to get the natives trapped. They're trapped between us, between two fires. They want results. Carter, we must contact Black River. They told me to send a man through.
Send a man through?
Yes, a man. Not a Smith or a Jones, Tom or Jack, but a man. They insist that I kill a man. Why don't they pick him out themselves? Why doesn't make you have to make me an executioner?
Well, I'm sure they don't look at it in that light, sir.
Because not. Because they're not in the hills. Facing 10,000 savages hiding behind rocks. Man can get through there. It's criminal. It's murder. I won't do it. You hear? I won't do it. We'll try the pigeons again. We keep on trying until we have no more.
There isn't a carrier left, sir.
One of them is shot.
What? What's that? Two pigeons are found poisoned this morning, sir. rest seems to have been released.
There must be a pigeon caught, have
you? Here, there must be a pigeon. I won't send a man out there to die. I won't. I won't, you hear?
Perhaps if I were to volunteer, sir. After all, I know this country like a book. I might stand a very good chance of getting through. And then it wouldn't be necessary.
I'm afraid it isn't quite as simple as that, Cotter. You're much too valuable here.
Thank you, just the same.
It's quite all right, sir.
No. It's got to be someone from the ranks. Someone young and capable. Someone young enough to make death seem even more horrible. Well, there's no use putting it off any longer. Form the battalion, Carter.
Very good, sir.
Sergeant Major! Battalion on parade!
Try it, they said. Try to get a man through. A bunch of brass buttons that don't know a field piece from a farthing. Try it.
I've never heard you quite so bitter before, sir.
I'm getting old, Carter. I've got to sentence a man to die. Some young man whose only crime is having been born an Englishman. Oh, it's not that the men were mine. I know that. They've reached the point where life or death or living doesn't mean very much. It's somebody's family I'm thinking of. You have a son, Carter, haven't you?
I had a son, sir. He died in France last year.
Oh, I'm sorry, Carter. I didn't know. I'm a father.
Yes, I know, sir.
I know what it means to love and lose the ones you love best. That's what hurts. Just think, Carter. In a few weeks, somewhere in England, a mother, a father, a wife is going to receive a little blue packet from the War Office. We regret to inform you that your son, husband, was killed in the performance of his duty. A medal will be sent you by separate post. Why don't they tell the truth? Why don't they say, I killed him?
The battalion is formed, sir.
Yes, I...
Hello, what's this?
Sir?
Oh, that. I was just amusing myself before your return. Reading a bit.
Audrey Carter.
Yes, sir.
I hold that when a person dies, his soul returns again to earth. Arrayed in some new flesh disguise, another mother gives him birth. With sturdier limbs and brighter brain, the old soul takes the road again. So shall I fight. So shall I tread in this long war beneath the stars. So shall a glory wreathe my head. So shall I faint and show the scars. Until this case, this clogging mold, dismiss it in all kingly gold.
Nice, really.
Yes, sir. So shall a glory wreathe my head. Well, come on, Carter. Let's play hangman.
All present and correct, sir.
Battalion!
Battalion, stand at ease. Men, I've come here to ask that one of you die in order that the rest of us may have a better chance to live. You know my situation here. You've been trying to rouse the Black River garrison by means of carrier pigeons. Now there are no pigeons left. Our only means of contact is by messenger. One man, because he will stand a better chance of getting through than a detail. Now, before any volunteers step forward, I want you to know in cold truth that the chance of success is one in a million. Only a miracle will bring the messenger through to Black River. From the group of volunteers, I shall select the man in whom I have the most confidence. But first, I want you to know this. I shall consider it no blot on a man's record, no evidence of a lack of courage if he does not choose to volunteer. And remember, too, that only the reward of death is the thing that you may reasonably be certain. Death. And a medal for your family. Volunteer, step forward. My God, Carter, look at them. The entire battalion. 1,500 men and not an ounce of sense amongst them.
You don't mean that, sir.
No, I suppose not.
Men, I appreciate your spirit, but you've got to think of your families as well as yourselves. You're still free to change your minds.
They won't move, Carter.
I'm afraid not, sir. Very well. I've made my choice.
Lieutenant Wood.
Colonel.
Yes, sir.
You understand what you're doing, Lieutenant?
Quite, sir.
You leave in an hour. Carter will give you your instructions. Dismiss the battalion.
Battalion! Dismiss!
Have I your permission, sir, to leave at once? I think I should prefer that.
Very well. Here are your orders. Go through them at your leisure.
Thank you, sir. Any further instructions?
No, I think not. Is there anything you wish to say before you leave?
Nothing, sir. Except that I'm grateful for the honor. I think you know what I mean, sir.
Good luck, Lieutenant. Good luck.
Thank you, sir.
Lieutenant Wood.
Yes, sir.
I... Good luck, Johnny. God be with you.
Thank you, sir.
Goodbye, lad.
Goodbye, father.
WEAF, New York. Our thanks, Richard Bennett, and may you long continue in good health. The Royal Gelatin Hour heads into Act the Second with a decided change of pace just ahead. Still to come, Lou Holt, Max Eastman, and John Edwards, who provides the aforesaid shift of mood and tempo with a brace of popular tunes in her somewhat different fashion. Dawn is a niece of Gus Edwards, famous impresario of youth, who called her to our attention. She faces, I think, a very happy future, with a comedy flair not unlike that of Martha Ray, a fine piano style resembling that of Ramona. She combines a control of voice production likely to remind you of Kate Smith, Ella Logan, or even Frances Langford. Now, that's quite a buildup, I must admit, but I'm sure I haven't made the hurdle too high for Joan Edwards, now at the piano.
Little knowledge. won't listen to my plea, won't say yes in any language to me. When will you say, see?
Miss Edward's Own. Here's a second. Riding High from Red, Hot, and Blue.
Love had tapped me, simply knocked me for a loop. Luck had ditched me till you pitched me from the soup. Now together we can weather anything. So please don't sputter if I should mutter. Now my riding high. Someone I love, man more, my love. So long, don't know goodbye. Now my riding, I'm riding high. I'm glowy, I'm dozy. Cause I'm feeling so happy. I'm flap, flap, flappy. So ring bell, sing song, blow horn, be long. Our love never will die. Am I riding? I'm riding high.
And we'll believe that I have pointed out from time to time that the most difficult part of our task in preparing this variety show each week is to find and present good comedy. I think we do pretty well, but we do make mistakes, and you, unfortunately, suffer for them. Part of the trouble is this. No one ever really knows what's funny and what isn't funny. Humor seems to defy analysis. That which makes Mr. A roar with laughter may leave Mr. B cold with scorn. So every once in a while, we find ourselves badly fooled. In our bewilderment, we turn for advice tonight to one of the few recognized authorities on the comic urge. Max Eastman, author of a current nonfiction bestseller, The Enjoyment of Laughter. If anyone knows what's funny, it ought to be Mr. Eastman, who has written a book of nearly 400 pages about it. Maybe that's funny in itself. Anyway, here's Max Eastman. Mr. Eastman, let's get right down to fundamentals. What is laughter?
Laughter, Mr. Valley, is a noise people make and what they do with their faces when they're amused. It's the same thing dogs do with their tails.
No, that wasn't quite what I meant. Perhaps I should have said, what is humor?
Humor is the feeling you have when you take a shock or an unpleasantness playfully and therefore laugh and enjoy it instead of getting mad about it. In other words, in everything at which you laugh, there is always an element which, if you were sensitive enough and serious enough and sufficiently concerned, would make you cry, and that's what makes you laugh. To put it in still another way, Mr. Valley, humor is an emotion which takes the place of pain when your mind and your whole nervous system is in a state of free play.
I'm afraid that doesn't help us very much. You see, with us, finding radio comedy is really hard work.
Yes, and that, I think, is just the trouble with most radio comedy. You produce so much of it that it has to be work. And humor can only thrive in an atmosphere of play. There is nothing more awful in nature than the sudden death and race-like fading from the landscape of humorous emotion at the mere suggestion that somebody has done or is doing or is going to do some work.
In other words, comedy, like life, is just a bowl of cherries. Don't take it serious. It's too mysterious.
Exactly. You know how it kills the humor of a joke to explain it. That is because in order to explain anything, you have to take it seriously. In order to enjoy humor, you have to be playful. Joking in that respect is just like tickling. Nobody can tickle you if you feel serious. The very same poke that makes you laugh when you feel playful will make you mad when you don't. That's why you can't enjoy being tickled by an ant. Because the ant is serious and so are you. That's why you can't tickle yourself in the ribs. Did you ever try that, Mr. Valley?
No, it doesn't exactly sound like fun.
Well, you see, you can't do it. You take yourself too seriously. Now, this business of turning out 40,000 jokes a week for the joke market has gotten to be a serious business. That's the trouble with it. The speed is too high, the competition too strong. The playful mood is gone, and that's why radio humor is, most of it, a little bit stiff in the joints. I can't see any cure for it except to get more comedians and not work them so hard. Not let them work so hard. Bring up a lot of chairs and force them into a sit-down strike.
And where are we going to find the comedians?
That, Mr. Valley, is your problem.
It certainly is, Mr. Eastman, and there's nothing funny about it. But supposing we have captured a comedian, how can we tell whether or not his jokes are any good?
Well, that's a very complicated operation. It takes a long time to dissect a joke and tell what's the matter with it. Jokes happen so quickly that people think they are simple, but they're not. They're just as complex as dynamite, and they fail to explode for just as many different reasons. They all contain one thing, however. They all contain a shock or a frustration or a disappointment which you enjoy because you take it playfully.
Well, all of that sounds plausible. Suppose you tell us a joke that fulfills that condition.
I'll tell you a joke that I think must fulfill it because it got such a big laugh when it was first born. It is a joke that was cracked by Irvin S. Cobb at the expense of Will Rogers. Cobb told me that it drew the biggest laugh he ever got out of an audience. And Will Rogers told me it was the biggest laugh he ever heard laugh. So I guess it must be all right. They had both been invited to a dinner in New York, and each was to be introduced by an appropriate celebrity. Will Hayes, the movie censor, introduced Will Rogers, and he did so with oil and flowers. His peroration ran somewhat as follows. And I want to say to you, ladies and gentlemen, that when this Oklahoma cowboy first strolled in here from the open spaces, it did not take New York long to discover and rejoice in the discovery, ladies and gentlemen, that Will Rogers had something under the old 10-gallon hat besides hair. Cobb jumped to his feet without an introduction. Ladies and gentlemen, he said, I am moved. I am touched. I want to endorse from a full heart those glowing words that have been spoken, and I want to add that it was high time somebody in this broad land of ours said a good word for dandruff.
Now, there's an illustration of the only test I know for jokes. If people laugh, it's funny.
That's absolutely true, Mr. Valley. And if it's funny, it's a good thing. We can agree about that. Laughter is a very ingeniously distributed massage of the vital organ. It helps children to grow up, and it helps people to stay young after they're grown up. Moreover, it is really a very wonderful thing to be able to enjoy a disappointment or an unpleasantness by the simple process of taking it playfully. No more ingenious scheme for getting along in a world that contains quite a plenty of unpleasantness could have been invented. The sense of humor is a very interior little coiled spring or shock absorber, and its principal function is to help us go light over the bumps. Good night, and thank you.
Gambling casino from Monte Carlo to Reno. They tell you that a beginner comes out a winner. A beginner fishing for flounder will catch a 17-pounder. That's what I always heard and always thought absurd, but now I believe every word. I've got beginner's luck. The first time that I'm in love with you. Gosh, I'm lucky. I've got beginner's luck. There never was such a smile or such eyes of blue. Gosh, I'm fortunate. This thing we've begun, much more than a pastime. For this time is the one where the first time is the one time. Oh, I've got beginner's luck. I'm lucky through and through, because the first time that I'm in love with you.
Welcome now another voyager home from the sea, an old and valued member of this club, Mr. Lou Holt. Lou has been in England until recently. This is his first American broadcast since his return from London, where he found the music hall audiences willing and eager to accept and applaud his peculiarly American brand of fun. London liked Lou, and Lou liked London. So much so that he threatens to start wearing a monocle any day now. He already had a cane, you may remember. We present Piccadilly's favorite circus, Lou Holtz.
Oh, that English music. You know, I've been over there, thank you. I've been there for some time. I feel like an Englishman. I speak like an Englishman. Well, cheerio, toodaloo, and shovel. Oh, yes, I was over there. I had a swell time. I was living over at a hotel called the Dorchester.
It's a beautiful hotel, very expensive. They charge $5 an hour. But I had a beautiful room there. Oh, it was simply swell. A beautiful room with twin beds. Why they gave me the twin beds, I don't know. But I had the twin beds, and in back of the beds, against the wall, was a cord. A beautiful velvet cord. I looked at it for days. I couldn't imagine why it was there. I couldn't imagine why it was there and what it was there for. I had the most tremendous urge to give this cord a yank. Have you ever been that way? Huh? For days I wanted to give it a yank, but I was afraid. Really, I was scared. I figured maybe I'll give this thing a yank, and in will walk the waiter with cocoa. Well, you know I'm not a cocoa man. So one night, I got into my pajamas. I got a big drink of Scotch whiskey, and I said, tonight is the night. I reached up, I gave this thing a yank, and what do you think happened? The lights went out.
Did you see any shows over there, Lou?
Oh, Rudy, I'm glad you asked me. I saw a sketch in Paris. I have it with me, by the way, tonight. It is simply marvelous. It's an episode in the life of Napoleon and Josephine. I brought the artist with me, too. The whole sketch is played in French. Now, there might be two or three people here from out of town who don't speak French. So, I will translate the scene for you. It'll be very easy for me. I used to sell the French postcards. As I said, the action takes place in the boudoir of the Empress Josephine. Now, the word boudoir in England means a place to sleep. In France, well, anyway... The action takes place in the boudoir of the Empress Josephine. The first artist to appear in the sketch is a Monsieur Ladieu. That's his name. I don't know why, but his name is Ladieu. Monsieur Ladieu, a member of the French court. Now, let Shakespeare have it slung. Someone is knocking. He's in.
Il est 5 heures.
He says, it's 1 o'clock.
Où est ma Josephine? Où est ma Josephine?
He says, where is my Josephine?
Où peut-elle être?
He says, where can she be?
Peut-être est-elle sortie à cheval.
He says, maybe she's in the sink taking a bath. Here comes Josephine.
Oh, mon adoré. Alphonse.
She says, hiya, Max.
Mon chéri, je t'adore, je t'adore.
She says, sweetheart, shut the door.
Je t'aime plus que la vie.
Oh, he says, darling, kiss me.
He kisses her, she kisses him, he kisses her, she kisses him, he kisses her, she kisses him, he kisses her. She says,
pourquoi fais-tu de m'embrasser?
He says, what's the idea, big boy? Why have you stopped making love to me?
Il est nécessaire que je noue le cordon de mon soulier.
He says, because I have to tie my shoelace.
À partir d'aujourd'hui, je t'appellerai Nero.
He says, from now on, I'm going to call you Nero.
Pourquoi ce nom?
He says, why are you going to call me Nero?
Parce qu'à un seul moment, tu noues ton soulier.
He says, because here I am burning up and you're fiddling around.
Chérie, tu as la plus jolie bouche. Ta bouche me fascine.
Oh, he says, baby, you have the most beautiful mouth in the world. There's only one thing that it needs.
Je suis heureuse que ma bouche te fascine.
Oh, she says, honey, what does my mouth need?
Mon adoré.
He says, a zipper.
Viens, Josephine, viens sur mes genoux.
Oh, he says, sweetheart, will you come over here and sit on my lap?
Avec plaisir.
She says, yeah, ma'am.
Je vais te demander de faire quelque chose pour moi que je ne t'ai jamais demandé avant.
Uh-huh. Getting suggestive. She says, sweetheart, I'm going to ask you to do something for me that I've never asked you to do before.
Tu n'as qu'à demander.
She says, honey, she says, what is it that you want?
Veux-tu me prêter
Comme il faut.
He says, darling, would you loan me $5,000?
$10,000!
I'm awfully sorry. It must be the new rate of exchange. He says, sweetheart, will you loan me $10,000?
No, 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 no.
She says, no, nine times.
Mon Dieu, non, pas.
She says, my goodness, my husband, Napoleon.
Josephine, que faites-vous ici? Qui est cet homme?
He says, sweetheart, who is this bozo? What is he doing in your boudoir?
Mon chéri, je refuse d'être interrogé comme ça. Je refuse de me soumettre. Je vais aller chez ma mère. Je vais aller chez ma mère tout de suite. Vous ne pouvez pas me traiter comme ça. Vous comprenez? Je suis l'impératrice. Je refuse d'être traitée comme ça. Sortez! Allez-vous-en! Allez-vous-en!
She won't talk.
Chien, pour ceci, vous allez mourir.
Oh, Napoleon's very angry. He says he's going to kill Max.
Oh.
I think she's going to faint.
Oh.
But I tell you, yeah. She's fainted in the sofa. Napoleon is now kneeling at her side.
Napoleon, je suis malade. Je suis faible, j'ai faim. Prenez un dollar dans le sucrier sur le buffet et achetez-moi une bouteille de lait.
She's got me. She says, ah, Napoleon, she says, I'm very sick. She says, I want you to go to the sideboard. In the sideboard, you'll find a sugar bowl. In the sugar bowl, you'll find half a buck. She says, Napoleon, I want you to take that half a buck, go down to the grocery store and buy me a bottle of milk.
Vive la France!
He says, okay, Toots.
Oh, regarde-moi dans les yeux et dis-moi que tu m'aimes.
Don't you, sweetheart, last we're alone. Look in my eyes. Tell me that you love me.
Mon chéri.
Je t'adore, je t'adore. Now he tells her to shut the door.
Napoléon!
Josephine m'envoie chercher du lait et quand je reviens, je trouve ma femme dans les bras d'un autre homme. Savez-vous ce que je vais faire? Savez-vous ce que je vais faire?
Oh, he says, so you send me out with a half a buck to buy you a bottle of milk. I come back and I find you in the arms of that man. Do you know what I'm going to do? Do you know what I'm going to do?
Oh, Dieu, qu'est-ce que vous allez faire?
My goodness gracious, what are you going to do?
Je garderai l'argent.
I'm going to keep the change from the half a buck.
You often hear it said that men like any color just so it's red. Now, something along this same line from Graham McNamee. The commands us to do our darndest to bring you fine artists you have never heard before. Our headliner will be Sir Cedric Hardwicke, one of England's greatest actors, now starring on Broadway in The Amazing Dr. Splitterhouse. An excellent supporting cast will, of course, include Edgar Bergen and Charlie McCarthy. The Valley Company moves on to Boston, Massachusetts, for a 6-day stay at the Normandy Ballroom, returning, of course, to you next Thursday. This is Rudy Valley bidding you all au revoir and good night.